Hi, you're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia on the 4th of April 2015. My name's Hereward Fenton. Great pleasure to be with you today, folks. Well, we've got a lot of info packed in for the show this week. In today's two-hour show, I will be bringing you an interview with Craig Isherwood in the second hour. Craig Isherwood is the Secretary of the Citizens Electoral Council of Australia, and the CEC is an organisation which is also a political party, which does a lot of deep analysis and has a lot of really deep thinkers involved in it, looking at the global geopolitical situation, the global economy, what's really happening with our monetary system. And Craig today will be telling us a little bit about a conference that he organised in Melbourne on the 28th and 29th of March, just finished. And the conference covered a lot of very important topics in the global economic sphere, with some speakers from Russia and a number of other countries, including an interview with Michael Meacher, MP from the UK. And I'm just reading here a few of the keynote speakers. Jeremy Corbyn, MP, also from the UK, I believe. Paul Gallagher, Economics Intelligence Director of the Executive Intelligence Review. Now, one of the foci of the conference that that Craig had was actually on the BRICS organisation. The BRICS organisation, BRICS, is an association of five major emerging national economies: Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. And this new emerging power bloc, I believe that they are indicating that they will have a lot of influence over global events, because they actually represent 40% of the world's population. That is quite a significant amount, and apparently 20% of the world's GDP. And, you know, these countries, which have not been part of the leading powers of the world, of course China now very much the emergent new superpower, but when you merge China, Brazil, Russia, India and South Africa, you get a power bloc which really is going to outstrip anything of the West. And really, this is not the West. So this is an interesting change in the geopolitical power balance of planet Earth. Now, I'm also going to be trying to glean from Craig where he sees the Australian economy going and what is indeed happening, what is the prognosis for our economy and our dollar. The Australian dollar has been very volatile. Ever since it was floated, the Australian dollar has been very volatile. But lately, the changes in the value of the dollar and the current sort of steep decline of the dollar really indicates an instability in our economy, which cannot be healthy. I mean, we need stability. Business needs stability. Countries need stability so that we can plan for the future, so that we know what something's going to cost from one day to the next, from one week to the next. There is something going on in the global economy at the moment which seems like there is a new instability. Of course, we've seen the euro plummeting in relation to the US dollar. And we have to ask the question, why is the US dollar so strong when interest rates are still at zero? And it seems that there's a kind of a false perception of growth in the American economy when it's not really happening. It's almost as if the rest of the Western world has to be suppressed in order for the US economy to look strong. Of course, the US economy and the primacy of the US dollar is tied to the US's ability to completely dominate the world through its military power. And I'll be talking a little bit more about that with Craig, and I really want to try and understand what's likely to happen. you know, what is likely to happen when finally that US power does actually start to wane. At the moment, it really hasn't waned. They still are the great superpower. They still dominate the Earth with all of their aircraft carriers and their military force. China is still sort of emerging, but hasn't demonstrated its power yet. What will happen? There are a few scenarios that I can envisage taking place. One of them being more along the lines of economic collapse, simply as the difficulties in the American economy continue to increase, and even with zero interest rates, there appears to be a shrinking of the U.S. economy. There's a deflation situation happening in the U.S., which they may not be able to control. And could it be that that suddenly the U.S. dollar will collapse? That at the moment it's going through kind of an upward spike, but then there will be this kind of contraction of the economy, the U.S. dollar will collapse, and that would actually signal the collapse of the U.S. empire itself. And then what would be the consequences for Australia? Because Australia is tied so closely to the U.S., what would be the outcome here? What would be the political outcomes? What would be the outcomes for the stability of our country on a security level? Because one of the scenarios I've thought about is that if the American sphere of influence starts to decline, that would kind of open up a vacuum for powers that want to come in and destabilize other countries, Australia being a target because we are a very valuable country. We have tremendous natural resources, and there are a lot of reasons why foreign powers might like to get a bit of that, you know, to get more power over this country. And I can envisage happening in Australia a similar scenario to what we've seen happening in Syria, for example, where you have a period of instability that is then leads to internal problems, terrorism. You would have terrorist type events occurring, which would then lead to government crackdowns, and then Australia would be perceived as being a country that needs to have perhaps some sort of intervention to protect us. I mean, this is purely speculative, but I think it's interesting to just go down the path of thinking about this and realise that what's happened in other countries could easily happen in Australia. And we've never really seen terrorism in Australia, but we've seen a lot of preparations for it. We've seen so many new laws brought in and almost anticipating it. And the scenario, though, under which it will occur will be a scenario where we have lost our major support of our major allies, and then the powers that want to get control of us will instigate terrorist actions, and then, of course, the government will try to clamp down. Then you have the same sort of unfolding crisis as we've seen in other countries, and it may well lead to a peacekeeping force being sent to deal with that. I mean, you know, it may seem ridiculous now. Australia looks like one of the most peaceful countries in the world. It looks like a country where people have come to flee from violence. But all the indicators are that that's not going to stay that way. And our own government is telling us this, folks. I mean, we've had so many indicators of it from the powers that be that I think it's time to open our eyes and realise that Australia's privileged position of being a rich, wealthy country where nothing much ever happens, which is very underpopulated, that this may not last. And we need to think about what's likely to happen. And this is one of the questions I'm going to be talking to Craig Isherwood about. I mean, we've got an economic situation here which I believe is unsustainable. We've got a real estate bubble in major cities in Australia, which is so far exceeds the real capacity of anyone to afford, whether you're talking about property or even rent. This bubble has to burst. Things have to change. At the same time, we see the massive increase in government expenditures, without really improving the quality of life. In Sydney, it's a city that that hasn't really had much major infrastructure improvements apart from private freeways for many, many years. And so it looks to me like a country which is maybe on the brink of some quite significant changes. Anyway, that's something to think about, and we'll be talking that a little in the second hour. I want to talk now a little about the subject of aviation disasters. And I want to look at some recent air crashes to highlight something that that seems to be a new trend in air crashes, which is that pilot error, or indeed, you know, deliberate pilot suicide, is being advanced for situations which really have no standard explanation. I mean, of course, this happened with MH Flight 370, which is still unknown, never been found. No one really knows what happened to it. But of course, it was asserted early on in the investigation of that disappearance that the pilot had gone crazy and crashed the plane. We now have the Air France flight, sorry, the German Wings flight 9525, which the media is now is determined to say was certainly a pilot had gone crazy and just wanted to commit suicide. And of course, we've got the Air France flight, which I was going to mention from 2009, which crashed very mysteriously. And interesting point about all these crashes is that there was never a distress call sent. No warning was given that that the plane was going to crash. The only reason that air traffic control knew the plane had crashed was because it disappeared from radar or because they couldn't reach it anymore. They just stopped responding to radio contact. And this just seems to be a new phase we've entered into in international aviation, where this is happening now on a regular basis. And you've got to wonder what is going on. Of course, they seem like very different contexts. The Malaysian Airlines 370 doesn't have any clear motive. Until more information is known about it, it would be impossible to say what the motive was for ditching the plane or whatever happened to it. The Malaysian Airlines flight that went down over the Ukraine, of course, we do have motive there. We have motive on both sides. And, of course, that's another situation where no distress call was ever sent and where the facts about what really happened are still in dispute. We have, I mean, there's actually four air crashes of recent times where the facts of what happened are really in dispute, and from our previous experience of what has happened, you know, over many decades of aviation, these events are unusual and anomalous. And one asks the question, you know, is there some more orchestrated force behind this? Are there people involved who are doing this deliberately on a higher level? Anyway, we are just going to break with Truth News Radio Australia. I'll be right back. Don't go away. Back with Truth News Radio Australia, and I'm just talking a little about anomalous air disasters, and there's actually five that I want to mention in today's show, and I'm just going to read through the names of each one in time sequence in the order of which they occurred. The first being Air France Flight 447, which went down on the 1st of June 2009. The second being the Malaysian Airlines Flight 370, which went down on the 8th of March 2014. Then, of course, we have Malaysian Airlines Flight 17, which went down on the 17th of July 2014. Then we have the Indonesian Air Asia Flight 8501, which went down on 28 December 2014 over the Java Sea. Then finally we have the German Wings Flight 9525, which went down on the 24th of March 2015 and which is very much in the news at the moment. Now, why am I singling out these five air disasters? I mean, they're all quite different. Actually, two of them are very similar, but they're different in context. But what the one thing they do have in common, despite the circumstances of the way the planes went down, the one thing they do have in common is that they're not fully explained. The media has rushed to give us explanations in each case, and many people have come forward challenging those explanations, and it just hangs there, you know, unexplained, a controversy which never gets resolved, and that must be creating a lot of added pain for the victims' family members with the lack of closure of really knowing what happened and why it happened. Because really, unless we can know what happened and why something happened, we can't ever feel that we've even learned anything from a disaster, that we're able to prevent it happening in the future. It creates a situation of extreme uncertainty when catastrophic events like this go unexplained. Now, the explanations in each case may be quite different, and maybe really you just have to look at individual reasons for why we haven't got clarity on these events. But, you know, most aviation disasters do get explained because you usually can isolate the problem to something fairly clear. The black box recorder usually gives valid information, and usually it's understood. Of course, the predecessor to this phenomenon of not really knowing what happened, of course, is 9/11, in which there is still a huge controversy as to what really happened on those planes and why they went down and who made them go down. And I feel that some of these recent disasters are kind of a follow-up on that. I mean, they follow from that. And that makes me think that there may be some ulterior motives going on behind why these planes are going down. One point is very interesting to note, and I think this really gives you an indication of why 9/11 is connected to recent disasters. I was watching an interview on the ABC, and they had an expert on, and they were saying that that the cockpit recorder had recorded sounds of the captain trying to enter the cockpit. And the expert they had on the ABC was saying, yes, well, that's right, but there's no way he could get in. And the interviewer said, well, why is that? Why couldn't he have kicked the door down? And, of course, the reason is that after 9/11, all aircraft cockpit doors became reinforced in such a way that it was virtually impossible to access from the outside. And, of course, this was done in response to what we were told on 9/11, which is that that these rogue Islamists had taken over four planes and locked themselves in the cockpit. And, of course, many of us don't believe that. The scenarios of 9/11 that we've discussed on this show many times basically don't fit the facts that we know. We find ourselves very, very sceptical of the official view as put forth by the 9/11 Commission report, stating that it was all done in this particular way, that the hijackers got access to the cockpit somehow, that they disabled the pilot and co-pilot somehow, they may have used pepper spray, you know, this or that, but really wasn't explained. Somehow the bad guys got control of the cockpit. And of course, the outcome of that after September 11 in the years following was that all major airlines all around the world changed their cockpit doors to become reinforced. And now we have a situation where we have a captain who was locked out of his cockpit by allegedly a rogue pilot, all made possible because of the security inventions since 9/11. Anyway, that's just something worth reflecting on. But let me turn now to talk a little about the Air France 447 disaster, because this is the first case of an airline disaster which appears to be purely pilot error, with no even really good explanation for why the pilots would have behaved in such a ludicrous manner, in such an unprofessional, such an idiotic manner. Now, the proximal cause for the Air France Flight 447 crash is said to have been a failure of the aircraft's pitot tubes due to obstruction by ice crystals. The pitot tubes are used to measure aircraft speed, and when they ceased to function, it is said that this caused the autopilot to disconnect. Now, this appears to be from the black box data that was recovered from the plane. But what happened after that is all pilot error. And just to give you a kind of a synopsis of what happened is that the autopilot disconnected, and the co-pilot who was flying the plane at that time apparently didn't know what to do. He didn't know how to fly the plane properly, and he actually took the plane into a steep climb and slowed the airplane's velocity down dramatically, which actually caused stall warning alarms to go off in the cockpit, which you think would be enough to let him know he'd done something wrong. Apparently, this all happened fairly quickly in the space of a few minutes. The captain came in and tried to put the nose down, and this is a very standard thing that any pilot knows in order to avoid a stall. You've got to put the nose down, because the co-pilot kept putting the nose up as if he thought the plane was going too fast. The captain came in, apparently, and attempted to push the nose down, but then the co-pilot pulled the nose back up again. And the scenario of what exactly unfolded during those last minutes is not clear. All they know is that there were these alternate commands given on the plane, and what actually ended up happening was that the plane started climbing again and climbed to quite a significant altitude and then started dropping with its nose up. And at that point, no distress signal was sent. There was no indication from anyone that there was a problem with the plane, but the plane started essentially falling out of the air like a brick with its nose pointed upwards and just plummeted into the sea. And sure, we can say, yes, there was a failure of one piece of equipment, but still, the crash of the plane was caused by the pilots essentially not knowing how to fly a plane. Because that's really their job. That's what they do. The autopilot is just there to help them out so they don't have to be on the controls the whole time. But these guys just didn't know how to fly a plane. Anyway, I'll be talking a little more about this in the context of the AirAsia disaster. We're going to break here with Truth News Radio. Don't go away. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And I'm just going through some facts from recent aircraft disasters. And I want to just finish up on the Air France 447 with reading you some of the key findings that were established in the two reports that were issued. And they're quite shocking. I mean, it really is quite an extraordinary lapse of competence if we accept what actually they're saying in these reports. The pilot in control pulled back on the stick, thus increasing the angle of attack, causing the aircraft to climb rapidly. And this was due to the incorrect airspeed indicator that that he had received as a result of the pitot tubes being blocked. But neither of the pilots noticed that the aircraft had reached its maximum permissible altitude. The stall warning sounded continuously for 54 seconds. The pilots did not comment on the stall warnings and apparently did not realise that the aircraft was stalled. 54 seconds, that's like a full minute of the stall warning going off, nose up, which will lead to a stall, and the pilots didn't recognise that they were stalling. Now, after reaching its maximum altitude of 38,000 feet, the plane started falling out of the sky. And the report states that despite the fact that they were aware that altitude was declining rapidly, the pilots were unable to determine which instruments to trust. It might have appeared to them that all values were incoherent. Now, the findings of the final report were that the crew made inappropriate inputs that destabilized the flight path. The crew failed to follow appropriate procedure for loss of displayed airspeed information. The crew were late in identifying and correcting the deviation from the flight path. The crew lacked understanding of the approach to stall. The crew failed to recognize that the aircraft had stalled and consequently did not make inputs that would have made it possible to recover from the stall. Now, that's really the most damning finding of all, and this is from the final report. It says here that the crew lacked practical training in manually handling the aircraft, both at high altitude and the event of anomalies of speed indication. They lacked practical training. I mean, here they are flying a commercial airliner, a major commercial airliner with 228 passengers, and they lacked appropriate training. This was an Airbus A330. So, at the very least, we can say that there is something very, very wrong with what's happened there in the case of those pilots' training. But let's have a look now at the AirAsia flight. I'm just going to skip over the MH370 because I want to actually talk about the AirAsia flight which crashed last year in December, just December 2014, crashed into the Java Sea during bad weather, killing all 155 passengers. Now, AirAsia flight 8501 was a scheduled flight from Surabaya in Indonesia to Singapore. After departure, the plane was in contact with the air traffic control and it approached a line of thunderstorms, and the cockpit requested and received permission to deviate from its original flight path to avoid these storms. The pilot then requested to climb and was granted that request and was cleared to fly to a flight level of 34,000 feet. But no response was received. Other aircraft in the vicinity were asked to contact the flight but did not receive a response. In the next minute, the aircraft climbed from 32,000 feet to 37,000 feet, that's in 1 minute, exceeding a climb rate of 6,000 feet per minute, about twice the maximum rate that a commercial aircraft should climb in still air. A photo of a secondary radar screen without a timestamp showed the aircraft at 36,000 feet and climbing with a ground speed of 353 knots, which is too slow to maintain stable flight in still air. The Indonesian Minister of Transport interpreted the aircraft behaviour as an aerodynamic stall when it began to descend, descending at 1,000 feet within 6 seconds and 8,000 feet within 31 seconds. The aircraft also began a turn to the left, forming at least one complete circle before disappearing from radar. The voice cockpit recorder captured multiple warnings, including a stall warning, a sounding in the cockpit during the final minutes of the flight. No distress signal was sent from the aircraft. Okay, I have an article here from Popular Mechanics titled Here's One Way AirAsia Flight 8501 Was Suspiciously Similar to Air France 447. The latest revelation puts added focus on pilots' actions and preparedness. This is published on the 29th of January 2015. It's still not clear what caused the crash of AirAsia Flight 8501, but the revelation that a co-pilot with far less experience than the captain was at the controls before the plane crashed into the Java Sea is once again bringing up parallels with the 2009 crash of Air France Flight 447. Both aircraft plunged into the sea from a cruising altitude during severe storms, with more junior crew members at the helm. And in both cases, stall warnings were heard on the cockpit voice recorders. Bloomberg reports that pilots cut power to a critical computer system that normally prevents planes from going out of control shortly before the accident. Now, the key similarities between both these crashes were that the plane was put into a very steep climb, which led to the plane stalling, and that in both cases, all the warning systems were working, the alarms were going off, but the pilots didn't react. They didn't even send out a distress call. I mean, this is inexplicable. Certainly, you could argue that the plane may have been lifted up by some updraft. This is suggested in the Popular Mechanics article. Certainly, you could argue that the computer equipment was malfunctioning. But the fact that the pilot's behaviour didn't indicate that they understood that they were in a crisis is itself a very, very disturbing piece of information. And clearly, in the case of 447, the pilot deliberately put the nose up. And this also is the case with the AirAsia flight. The co-pilot who was in charge put the nose up, leading to a stall, which was indicated by the stall warning systems. Very loud alarm going off that you can't possibly ignore. So despite all of the malfunctioning and all of the acts of God that may have contributed to this situation developing, what is clear is that these pilots and co-pilots behaved in a manner as if they really didn't know how to fly a plane. And that, to me, is very, very disturbing indeed. Of course, the situation with the Malaysian Airlines flights and the recent Germanwings flight, of course, are all very different. And in the case of the most recent disaster, it appears that the co-pilot just wanted to kill a whole lot of people and himself and put the plane into a dive. That may well be the case. But again, this says something about the level of people that are now in control of flying aircraft. I have to get on to talk a little bit about Malaysian Airlines 370 as well, because there are certain aspects of that which are also completely inconsistent with known aircraft procedures. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We're going to break. And do stay tuned for the second hour because I've got a great interview coming up.
What happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it?
Hi, welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. And I'm talking about anomalous air disasters. I've been talking a little about Air France, Flight 447, and Air Asia, Flight 8501, which both crashed as apparently a result of pilot error, coupled with some equipment malfunctions. Now, what is in common with that and the other three events that I want to briefly talk about is that in each case we have a disaster. Actually, let's keep the Ukrainian one out of it because that appears to be more straightforward. So let's just talk about MH370 and the German Wings disaster. Those two, again, appear to be caused by aberrant behaviour on the part of the pilots. Now, in the case of MH370, which I have spent quite a bit of time studying, several quite extraordinary things jump out at you. First, as with the other disasters I was talking about, no distress signal was sent. And this is despite the fact that the plane was recorded flying along one particular flight path for several hours, according to the satellite data. No distress signal. Nothing. Simply stopped communicating and also stopped broadcasting its transponder signal shortly after leaving Malaysian airspace. The plane was on its way from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing. Now, the plane switched off, the pilot, one would presume, switched off the transponder, which provides additional tracking information that is used by air traffic control, including altitude information. Now, switching off the transponder is not just a simple task of pushing a button. You actually have to pull a circuit breaker. So it's a very deliberate action. So we have an aberrant pilot. And one must conclude then that there is some motive for this. And of course, the stories that were floated in the media at the time were very similar to the ones about the German Wings pilot. And they were saying that, you know, the pilot was a little depressed, that he was having marital troubles, that he'd made no future plans beyond the date at which the aircraft disappeared. And we had headlines from major publications coming out. I'll just read a few of them to you. MH370 pilot switched off oxygen supply to kill himself. We have from the Huffington Post, pilot Zahari Shah committed suicide and killed everyone else on the Malaysia Airlines flight. From the Telegraph, MH370 captain plotted route to southern Indian Ocean on home simulator. And a big deal was made of the fact that he'd had various flight simulator flights planned and landings in various regions in the Indian Ocean. But, of course, he's a pilot, and later on that was discounted as being a little bit silly because, I mean, if you're a pilot, you will be practicing using a flight simulator, and apparently this guy was really quite involved and obsessed with his job, so it's perfectly natural to be practicing takeoffs and landings on a flight simulator. Now, despite all this speculation and hyperbole in the media, with experts coming forward saying that, you know, they're certain that that he committed suicide and that it was all deliberate, the Malaysian government determined that it was an accident, and that's the current status of flight MH370. They're saying it's an accident, but they have no theory, no coherent theory, as to how it might have happened, other than the speculation that the crew may have become incapacitated by hypoxia. But that is an extremely implausible explanation as well, considering the length of time the plane was actually up in the air after it lost contact, and the fact that it obviously negotiated a new route. It actually changed direction. I don't think people who are incapacitated by hypoxia are going to reprogram the autopilot or disable the transponder, for that matter. Now, in the case of Andreas Lubitz, the man who allegedly brought down the Germanwings plane, it's said that he was mentally unstable, that he had received treatment for depression, and then some quotes of his about wanting to change the world, that his girlfriend, he apparently told his girlfriend, were used as evidence that he was going to do some crazy act, when in fact, you know, someone saying that they want to change the world can mean an awful lot of things. Most of them don't mean murder-suicide. And once again, we're confronted with a situation where we don't actually know. I mean, it's incredible that with all the technology and with all the data that they do have, because they do have the flight recorders from the Germanwings plane, really, they don't know why the plane crashed. And it just comes down to an assertion that this guy must have wanted to kill himself. What I do see emerging, perhaps, out of all of this, folks, is a change in aviation, a change in the whole practice of aviation. I mean, we do know that it is possible to completely control an airplane through fly-by-wire. You don't actually need a pilot sitting at the controls. And these disasters are going to further the agenda of those who would like to say, look, we shouldn't really have pilots on planes. We basically should, the plane should be either flown remotely or by computer so that these types of events cannot occur. I'm just predicting that this will be one of the outcomes of this latest, you know, series of disasters, which appear to have been caused by either extremely incompetent pilots who don't even seem to know how to fly a plane, or pilots that are aberrant, or pilots that may be crazy or suicidal. And we're sort of seeing this cluster of events. And whenever I see a cluster of events, I always think, you know, that there's got to be some other reason why this is happening. I don't think coincidence is a good enough way of explaining what's actually happened here in the past few years, particularly really just in the last couple of years. But the examples that I've shown to you today really illustrate that that there is now a case for limiting the control of pilots over planes. Of course, they're going to bring in new regulations also that require two officers in the cockpit at all times. They're certainly going to bring that in. But what's probably on the horizon is a complete fly-by-wire scenario. And just to illustrate that, here's a couple of articles from the mainstream media. One of them published shortly after the Air France Flight 447 crash. Human pilots are a problem, and robot-controlled planes may be the solution. The pilot of Air France Flight 447 was operating on 1 hour of sleep before the plane crashed into the Atlantic. In Philadelphia, a man impersonating a pilot made it into a US Airways cockpit. The era of robot pilots can't get here fast enough. a pilot for Air France, responsible for the lives of 228 people, stays up all night entertaining his girlfriend. The Telegraph reports that he was asleep when the plane began to display signs of trouble. It then took him more than a minute to get back to the controls. The transcript of the cockpit conversation and data from the flight recorder reveal that he and his co-pilot made a series of errors that led to the 2009 crash. According to planecrashinfo.com, pilot error is the cause of half of all fatal accidents. So why have pilots? The primary impediment isn't technology. Planes are currently flown primarily by instruments, nor is complete autonomy impossible. After all, and here's a demonstration of what a small plane developed by MIT can do in a confined space. There's a video there that displays an autonomous plane. Now that's just one article there. That was from 2013, after the investigation of Flight 447 had concluded. Now here's a more recent article from March 27, 2015, in the wake of the Germanwings disaster, from BuzzFeed News. We could easily have planes without pilots if only passengers would fly in them. We have the technology to fly planes piloted entirely by computers, experts say. The problem is that passengers aren't ready for robotic planes, and neither are human pilots. The weakest link in cockpit safety, the pilot, appears to have snapped in the crash of Germanwings Flight 9525, which killed 150 passengers on Tuesday. These incidents raise the question, in an area of drone warfare and autonomously piloted space vehicles, do we really need human pilots? And I'll just leave that with you to consider. We are going to break, and we'll be having this excellent interview coming up with Craig Isherwood. But I think that we may be looking in the future at pilotless planes, and it looks like the events that we've seen are going to be certainly used as a reason why the average customer, the average fare-paying customer, will be willing to accept it. Anyway, that's not a conspiracy theory, folks. That's just an observation. Maybe it really was an accident. Anyway, coming up, we have Craig Isherwood from the Citizens Electoral Council. Really interesting discussion on the global economy and Australia's position. Stay with us for hour two.